All right, here we go.
Who's the best show here?
Back show!
That's the best one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
I am short.
Big O! Showtime!
That's kind of fucking weird, but okay.
When you were making egg poo young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a little thing tech show, and that's back. If you don't like the cast, you can stick it up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll only get bad. But the strolling, go back to DLFGS.org. And I see challenges on LinuxLink.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, go together, just about to begin.
Yeah, welcome to episode 950 of the Linux Sling Tech Show. We are about a year away from episode 1000. And I say a year because it's like 52 more weeks. Well, actually 50 more weeks, but I figure we might have a week off between now and then for holiday stuff or whatever. Possible. So probably about another year. But anyway, on the show tonight we have Pat.
Hey, happy Easter.
Yeah, and yeah. Joel?
Good evening.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe Joe. I don't know. He's busy.
Yep.
You
He's
had
running
asked me,
for office, so he is busy.
Yeah. You had asked me how was the houseboat, and it was a really good time. I had never been on a houseboat before. It is one of the... I think if it's the only or one of the very few apparently on the East Coast or roughly, you know, on the East, in the East, that allows you to rent a houseboat just right off the dock like that and take it out. Apparently they were grandfathered in some insurance clause there, which allows them to do this. So my sister-in-law worked it all out and took care of it, her and her husband. And basically, it was just my sister-in-law, her husband, and their daughter, who is 14, I think, and then my wife and I and Avery and Lillian, who went. And there was two, I don't know if you would call them cabins, but it's basically, if you've never been on a houseboat, it's just like, you know, it's a boat. It's a big rectangular boat. And you get on and there's a little, bow. Is the bow the front of the boat? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in the bow... It's, you know, there's like an area. It's like the size of a small living room, you could say, and it had a table there, and then the upper deck extended out a little bit, so it formed a covered area over the bow of the boat. There were three doors on that boat, on that front, one at the very front. And then two kind of like on the side, so depending on where you were getting off on the docks. And then you go inside, and right there is the cabin where the controls are and the steering wheel for driving the boat. And then you're also right there at the first kind of like table next to that. It's like a dining room table kind of thing. And then it's immediately after that is the kitchen, which had a countertop separating the area between the table and the rest of the kitchen, and then the sink, the stove, which was a propane stove, and there was a dishwasher right there, the cabinets, drawers, and then a refrigerator, and then on the other side, right behind where the captain would sit to drive the boat, is another dining room table, and then there's a little closet right there. You walk into the first sleeping area, which had a bed on the left-hand side if you're walking towards the back. And then it had a bunk above that bed. So the bottom bunk could sleep, like, that's where my wife and I slept. And Lillian slept at the top. Avery, that first table area converts into a bed. She slept there. And then on the right side of that room was the first bathroom. And it's just like a little shower in there and a toilet and a sink. And it operates on, when you go to the bathroom, it's got like this little propeller that mulches stuff when it goes down into the tank. It doesn't use a lot of water either. And it has enzymes in there so that it has a pleasant smell. Whether you're making smells yourself or not, an unpleasant smell, and makes a lot of noise. It sounds like
like an airline bathroom.
It sounds more like a garbage disposal a little bit, because it's got that grinding feature in it, you know. So, and then after that bedroom, there's the second bedroom, which had the beds on the right hand side, again the same layout, and then the left hand side was the bathroom. And then you walk out to the back, and there's a little area. It's uncovered. It's about 6-7 feet long. The engine's right there. Then on either side of the engine is kind of like a little platform where you can sit and stuff, or if you wanted to swim, you could jump off there. To the left, there's also a ladder back there that takes you up to the roof. And the roof is just a flat roof where you can, and it's carpeted. It's got like, you can hang out up there. It's got sides that were probably about 2 feet up, maybe a little higher than that. So you can stand up there and you're not going to like fall over the edge, right? It's just like being on the side of a boat. So, and then it had like a little raised platform on as you're getting towards the front, and then a seat up there, a bench-like seat, and another set of controls, so you could actually drive the boat from at the top. And then over when you go out the back of the boat, on the left side of the motor, starting from the top, there's a slide that they had, so you can slide down into the water from the slide. Now, of course, we didn't do any swimming because the water was pretty cold. The rest of the weather was great. So it was cool. I did a lot. You know, I was really worried about conserving water because I felt, you know, you got to be careful of how much water you use on the boat because we don't have a lot of water, obviously, and you don't want to drive all the way back to get water. Anyway, we picked the boat up. We all got in. And then Dave, who's my sister-in-law's husband, was like, they've done this many times before. So what you end up doing is you can go anywhere. You're allowed to pretty much go anywhere except for private property on this lake. And generally speaking, what you do is you're going to take the boat somewhere on the lake, be it an island or a cove, to spend the night, because you don't really want to spend it out on the open water. If inclement weather or whatever kicks up, it could push the boat around. And this is a man-made lake. It's pretty big, and the depth ranges, you know, from a couple of feet all the way out to like 150 to 200 feet in some areas. So if you're out there in the deeper water, you know, of course you don't have an anchor that's going to cover you down, keep you in one spot. You don't want to be blowing all over the lake. So generally speaking, what they do is there's a bunch of coves all around this lake that you can go to. So we went all the way across to the mountainside where the lake ends, and it goes right up a mountain. There's a dam over there and everything, which was pretty neat we saw. And you go into a cove, and you run the boat like pretty much right up onto the shore, the front of it. And now you could just throw out anchors, and it's possible, you know, depending on how much the water rises overnight, because it does, they do open the dam and they do let it rise, and there's tides in there and everything. So it does ride a little bit, and depending on how much rain may have happened or whatever, it rise. So it's possible that it could rise up enough to pull the boat off, and you know you wake up the next morning and you're floating out back in the lake again. So what they have taken to doing is they had like cargo straps, and he put that out, wrapped them around the trees, had the ratchet there to hold it together. So that kind of kept the boat secure on the from going out on shore, throw out a couple of anchors, and then you could walk around out there in the woods to do a little hiking, which we did, looking around, having fun, looking for newts and salamanders. The next day when we woke up, unfortunately, the opposite kind of happened to us, where the water had receded by about a foot or something like that, significant amount. From where it was originally, and we were kind of like stuck, and it was a little difficult to get the boat off. So we kind of like just hung out there for a few hours, waiting for the water level to rise, and then we were able to easily just like push it off of there and get the motor going and get it off of there. So that was the only hiccup through the whole trip. The rest of it was wonderful. And that really wasn't much of a hiccup, because we just spent a little more time there hanging out, looking for stuff and doing stuff. And that's basically what the trip was. Going to different islands and into different coves and getting off, looking around, having a good time, just relaxing. I haven't really done a trip like that ever in my whole life, where essentially there's not much to do, like, other than do some hiking around. We did a little bit of fishing. It
was wonderful, huh?
Yeah, we did a little fishing, but it really wasn't good weather. I mean, the weather was fine, but it was still a little cold, and there wasn't a lot of fish hanging out. They showed up at night, because you have to have the lights on some of the lights on, and in the back of the boat, right, you could see the fish. There was it looked like bass or trout that were hanging around the back of the boat, but then we didn't see them during the day, and all the stuff that, you know, everything that we tried using for bait or anything, really nothing was biting. So the season just wasn't right yet, I don't think, for fishing in those areas. Really? Yeah, and we saw some foxes, some eagles, snakes. A nice black snake, newts.
Yeah,
it was a good time. Different islands and stuff that we went to. It was weird, because it took me at least a day and a half to really kind of get comfortable with not doing anything, you know, and just like I always felt like as if I sat down for more than a half an hour, I'm like, I should be doing something, like I am at home, like I'll be cleaning something or looking something up or working or cooking or something like that. And here I didn't really have to do anything. So it took like a day and a half to kind of get to that point of enjoying it. And then like a day and a half later, we're on our way home. So I didn't get to enjoy it too much. That aspect, didn't really get into it that I can just appreciate it as much as I should have until it was almost time to leave. But it was comfortable. I had no problem sleeping. Now, my Lillian thought it was a little hot. Aaron, like a week before, 2 weeks before we left, not even probably a week before we left, she realized that she probably herniated or slipped a disc in her neck.
Ooh, ouch.
And it's like been causing like severe pain in her right arm, and it gives her a little numb and tingle. So it's like a pinched nerve in there, and that's been like really bothering her. She had to go to the doctor for it. They gave her some medication and muscle relaxers and, you know, a steroid to try it and to see if it would help out. And then that was like a week, and then the next week, like that was, then she went on this trip. And then this week when she got back, she just went to the specialist today. They got her into a specialist. They have to schedule, and they said, they took an x-ray. They're like, yeah, there's something here. You got to go for an MRI. And they scheduled for an MRI on Tuesday. So she's got that. And in the meantime, she's like been in a lot of pain. But she had a lot of discomfort sleeping specifically because of that. But other than that, I mean, it was very fine, very comfortable. I was very impressed. Right. It was great. The boat was great. We did have cell phone signal out there. So it depended on where we were, and it almost felt like also the time of day. I don't know. When we were right, like certain times of the day, it seemed like the signal just dropped. And then, so most of the time, and it's not that I really needed cell phone signal or using the internet a lot because we were doing other things. But yeah, that was nice. One of the issues that you have is power on the boat.
Right.
And they have a generator on there to charge the batteries. But if the generator's not on, a lot of the outlets get shut off. So when I first arrived there, I had pretty much used all the battery on my phone with having the map open and everything. And using that, so it was like a 4-hour drive to get out there. And I'm not sure. Right. I think I might have knocked my phone off the charger the night before. So, I didn't have a choice. So when I plugged it in, thinking like when we were leaving, I was thinking, okay, when we were heading out to where we were going, it wasn't until we actually got to the place where we were going that they turned the generator on. And then the power was in the outlets and stuff like that. So it was really started charging my phone at that point. So I think that's what it was. Anyway, it was a great time. Beautiful, beautiful lake. There were not a lot of people on the lake this time of year. So, and I think that's why they arranged the trip at this time. Because it's a lot cheaper, it's off season, there's not a lot of people, so they typically go either early spring or late fall, so that that's just the way it is. It's kind of weird because you just go there and they're like, here's a QR code that you scan on your phone that has all the rules that you need to follow for boating on the lake and things to be aware of. And then they're just like, here are the keys, you have any questions? Nope, have a good time. Yeah, so it was pretty neat. It's a little weird running a boat like right up onto the shore, but that's how they do it. It's just a little weird.
Yep.
And that was my adventures on the houseboat. Would I do it again? Absolutely. Did I have a great time? Absolutely.
Yeah, I can imagine sleeping on the boat was pretty comfortable. The problems that your wife had.
No, you know what's really weird, though, is, like, I didn't feel seasick at all, and I felt fine. Like, being on the water didn't bother me at all, but when we drove home that day, and I was like, that day, the rest of the day, I felt really off balance the rest of the day. It felt like it was just like really weird. It was like I wasn't used to being on land, or it felt weird feeling on land. Yeah. I like had this like weird, I wasn't off balance, but it almost felt like I was off. Like something felt off, and it only lasted that day. I got up the next day, and I didn't have any weird sensations or feelings. Like I didn't seem to have much of a problem driving home. But when I got home, a little while after walking around for a little bit, I'm like, man, it feels funny. It doesn't feel right. I feel off. But no, it was good times.
Yep.
Highly recommended if you get the opportunity to do that, take a houseboat or whatever.
Sweet.
The one thing I didn't expect, like I had no idea what to expect. Once you get out there, there's not a lot of places, especially in that lake, and I don't know how many places, but there's not a lot of places that you can dock other than going to like an island or a cove. It's not like you can pull up to a dock or not a lot of places to do that where if you wanted to like if you forgot something and you needed to go like buy some food or whatever, you need to typically you should bring all that everything you're going to want on that boat before you leave and then when you're out there because you don't want to waste the fuel coming all the way back to the to where the marina is. So anyway, that's it. I'm finished talking about that. Good times.
Cool. Well, we had our trip to Hershey since the last full show. The Android Auto worked pretty well until I got to, you know, there's like four tunnels between Pennsylvania, like between New Stanton, Pennsylvania, and the Gettysburg Pike, which is where I got off of the turnpike. And it was fine. It would basically near those tunnels, it would like lose connection because the wireless part of Android Auto goes over the Wi-Fi in my Traverse. But other than that, it was good. We switched temporarily over to my wife's phone just so that I wouldn't miss exits and stuff like that. And the Easy Pass worked perfectly, although it was kind of weird where it it would take like 2 or 3 days before it actually showed up on my Ohio account. So it was like 2 or 3 days afterwards where I got basically both trips on Easy Pass. So then we drove down into Hershey, stayed right on Chocolate Avenue, which was really nice. It was kind of cold to walk in downtown. You could, but it was just kind of a little bit chilly. I had my own, thicker fleece on the whole time I was there. And we did go over to, Hershey Park. It was kind of cold to ride a lot of the rides. So we really didn't ride too many. We rode the monorail there and the Kissing Tower. And, then we walked through, Zoo America, which is pretty cool. Chocolate World is, again, since 20 years ago, it's completely changed since I've been there again. Got some chocolates and stuff, and Luke got a sweatshirt, which is kind of nice. And then I tried to take a tour, just kind of by car through the area.
What kind of chocolate did you buy?
Okay, I both bought golden almond bars. That's probably the only thing you just can't find at the store that I bought. The other two things that I bought was the lemon crisp Kit Kats. Those are available. They're like part of the Easter chocolate selections. And then the vanilla filled Hershey Kisses. So those were good too. They did give you, once you rode the free ride, they gave you just a plain snack size Hershey bar. But then on the way into the park, which also happened to be the first day that it was open, so there was a lot of people there getting their passes. On the way there, they're doing like a some sort of contest or giveaway, which I didn't enter. But as part of trying to talk you into signing it, they actually gave away these Reese's. They call them like shell eggs, or I forget what shell shakers or something like that. So basically, it was a shell of chocolate, and in the middle of it was like a little bit of a like you know maybe about 5-6. Reese's Pieces, so you can actually shake them. So they are in the Easter section of most stores now. I actually bought some more once I got home since Easter's this week. So I ended up with two of them because they gave one to my wife, and my wife gave it to me. I ate it. But in the park, God, I hate eating in the park. It's even worse now. I got a mediocre hamburger and fries, and I think Luke got a hot dog and fries, and my wife also got a hamburger. And then we got three drinks, and all said and done was $60 fucking dollars. More than I'd pay for decent food through Uber Eats. So, we didn't go to a lot of restaurants. A lot of that's because my son's on the spectrum, and in you know, once he's had enough of people, he's had enough. So we did do some Uber Eats there, but I did order a pizza from Primanti Brothers. I just got a pizza instead of a sandwich, but it was pretty decent. Yeah, it was not bad. And I went and I got some Lebanon bologna, Dan. I got actually, I only got a little bit of it left.
What'd you get? Settlers? Was it seltzers?
Seltzers. Yeah, seltzers. I got. And it was actually like $3 or $4 cheaper there than it is here. So I bought 2 16-ounce. Did I get three? Yeah, I got three. I got 3 16-ounce packs. I got one regular and then one sweet. Then of the sweet variety, they have a double smoked version of the sweet variety, which I'm going to be brutally honest. It was good. I'm not going to say it wasn't good, but I didn't really feel what this double smoking did, if you know what I mean.
Okay. But
it tasted fine. I did find another brand, but it was Kunstler's, and it was just a little chuck, kind of like a summer sausage style. So, you know, it wasn't like something you can make a sandwich out of, but it was pretty good, and it was their sweet variety. I couldn't get anything at the deli because by the time I went to Giant and then I went to Weiss Markets there. By the time I went to Giant, the day I got that was the deli was closed. So it was like after 8 o'clock. So, but, and I bought a shoe fly pie. We had that when we were there. That was delicious. I didn't find like any Pennsylvania Dutch restaurants, but we did eat at this place in Palmyra called Funks. It's FUNCKS, which is a restaurant that was there. It was there when my grandma and grandpa were there. And it's been there since probably before they moved to Palmyra. 1969 is when it was there. But then Sunday, I took Luke over to the Palmyra Bowl. So he had his bowling stuff with him. So we took him. He got to bowl. And then, well, I'm not going to talk too much because it was not a good day. It's that Sunday. He bowled and then he was like, okay, let's go home. I'm like, well, we're not driving to Grove City tonight. That's not happening. You know, but so he ended up coming back to the hotel and he went down to the pool. I wanted to go somewhere, so I just jumped in the car and went. I drove over to Palmyra. I saw both houses my grandparents lived in. And then I went and tried to find, I knew it was gone, but I went to try to find any evidence, see if they put like a marker or something up of where, my grandma and grandpa worked when they were working for Milton Hershey Schools, and there's like nothing, man. It's completely gone. And in fact, I even got even more shock. Which something I didn't know, but the original chocolate factory, it's gone too.
Is it?
Yep. They tore it down. They built one, on the west side of Hershey as you're coming in on 422 where the Reese's plant is. If you look kind of behind that, there is a huge plant, and that's where it is now. They built a nice modern plant. The only thing I think of now is I think probably in the summer, I don't think the chocolate smell is going to be near as prevalent as it was from the old factory, just because a couple of reasons. One is location. It's just completely – it's a whole lot farther away from Hershey Park. And two, the modern factories have all sorts of filtering stuff on like their stacks and stuff like that. So, and ventilation and all that. So, not as much of the chocolate smell will get out. So, but I actually read an article where they said that they actually probably make more at the new factory than they ever made at the old one. And what they make in Hershey now is Reese's cups and Reese's products are there. That's in the Reese's section. And then the other plant is both the regular and the chocolate Hershey bars
or chocolate, I'm sorry, the regular chocolate bars and the chocolate and almond bars that they make there, and Hershey Kisses and Hershey Syrup. I don't know if they make the filled kisses there, but they have all sorts of factories elsewhere. And the kind of a real sad thing, too, for a long time, the chocolate factory was one of the biggest employers in the city of Hershey. Now it's the Med Center. The Med Center has more employees working at it than Hershey does. And
they have a pretty popular Med Center, don't they?
Oh, it's huge too.
Yeah.
I think Penn State does a lot of like a lot of their internships and stuff there. You know, so. But it's a large Med Center, and then they got locations all through the both Lebanon and Derry or Dauphin and trying to remember. I think it's Derry, the county that Hershey's in. But it was a nice visit. Kind of sad because I'm like. This looks different when I'm driving down Chocolate Avenue, and it took me a minute to figure out what had changed, but they still have, like, I think the part my mom worked in is still there, because there's an old section, there's one section that always was not kind of industrial looking, more like an office building like look, an older office building that is, but they had completely remodeled that. So it's a much more modern space there. And that's where, like, you know, their IT, probably the CEO has their office there and stuff like that, you know. They did keep the stacks. So those iconic Hershey stacks are still there. And the silos that they used to have the cocoa beans in are still there, too. And you can see those from the zoo. So... that is also a part of it. The zoo was pretty fun, actually. I think we enjoyed the zoo more than we did Hershey Park itself, because you know, that one thing about Hershey Park that you always forget until you go the next time is how many hills they have in the park. It's probably one of the hilliest amusement parks I've ever been to. But it's still nice to go there. I'd like to go, like, maybe next year in the summer, probably when it's a little warmer, we can go to the water park and stuff like that. But, and maybe if it's not stupid expensive, stay at Hershey Lodge instead. Hershey Lodge is really neat. If you stay there, they have a water park attached to the hotel. And then you can also just, they have like a bus that you can ride from the hotel over to the park. So that way you don't have to drive and pay the parking over there.
Go any rides?
Kind of nice. Like I said, we went on the monorail, the Hershey, the Kissing Tower, and they had the antique cars running, the sports cars. Those are both, like, you know, you got both the sports cars and the antique cars are around the base of the Kissing Tower. And it looked like they had the sports cars shut down. I'm betting they were working on, like, remodeling the cars. It's just the first day of the year that we were there. So, yeah, I don't think it'll be shut down the whole time. I did get to see a lot of, like, the new Candemonium roller coasters, like, right at the front of the park. You walk in and it's there. So it's a huge coaster. Hershey's gone all in on the roller coasters, and I didn't ride any of them because I kind of feel uncomfortable getting on them because I'm a big dude, you know. they strap you in so tight. It's just not enjoyable for me. I have more fun just walking around the park and looking at things, to be honest. And I have more fun digging around and looking at all the stuff at Chocolate World. Chocolate World's really gotten a lot larger with a lot of things. The chocolate section is just tremendously huge. They have lots of, like, they had a whole wall of Hershey Kisses and all sorts of different flavors, and some of them were exclusive that you can only get them at the park, at Chocolate World, I mean. So, but so it was just, it's really cold to ride rides too, and Hershey's also really good. Like, if you have younger kids, tons of kiddie rides. You know, and all sorts of stuff like that. We didn't even make it throughout all the way out to the new section. It got to be too much for Luke, just too much stimulation. So we ended up we were there. We had about 3 hours left until the park closed, because it closed at like 7 or 8. I can't remember, but it's not at their, they're not at their summer hours yet. But I'm like, it was still fun just to walk around. So Turnpike was as exciting as it always is, which means not much. We did stop on the way out, but when we hit the Turnpike on the way back, we just went all the way through. And New Stanton has a sheet, so we stopped and got a sandwich and gas and headed back the rest of the way to Ohio. I was almost, or like, we were like maybe an hour away from the Columbus area, and Luke's like, Dad, I gotta go to the bathroom. So we had to stop in Ohio too. So we stopped twice on the way back. So I think we stopped like twice on the way out too, only because I left, I had like 3/4 of a tank when I left the Columbus area, and I thought, you know what, I can make it all the way to Pennsylvania before I have to fill up. I could have, but we did stop in Ohio, and I'm kind of glad we did. So on the way out, I paid $3.68 for gas, and that got me the rest of the way to Hershey. And then I filled the gas up the night before.
Wait, how much was the Sunday gas night? You said
$3.68.
Oh, I thought you said you paid $360 for gas.
Oh no.
I was like, when you said $3.60, I was like,
that Traverse didn't have that big.
Either he got really great gas, like he filled it up for $3.60, or he had to pay $360. I'm like, what the hell are you driving?
No. In Palmyra, though, when I filled up, it was 4.25. I'm like, holy crap, man. It's been heading in the right direction gas price wise around here. It's mostly below 4. I think it's dropped like anywhere between 8 and 10 cents. So, but the gas has been kind of ridiculous out here. Food prices, I'm honestly not seeing a whole lot of difference in food prices yet, except for things like meat. I think the ham I got was a smallish one. That was about $20. I didn't look and see how much it weighed. It just, it looked,
you got a ham like in Pennsylvania?
No. I got that here.
Oh.
I got that last weekend when we're I thought, you know what, next week's Easter, I better grab one. And I did.
You know what happened to me is we got back and for some reason I had it in my head that Easter was last Sunday.
No. And I'm
like, because usually, like, they do like the spring break right before Easter Sunday. It always seems like, because, and I'm like, I went out and got all the stuff for Easter, and then I didn't realize until Saturday that Easter was not until the following.
Well, shit, you're already then.
Yeah, I have hard.
I still have to get a few things actually.
I steamed the eggs and everything. It was all ready for decorating. And now I've been eating a lot of eggs.
I've done two things. We don't dye them anymore. Luke's really doesn't get a kick out of dyeing eggs anymore. But whenever I hard-boil eggs now, I've done it a couple new interesting ways. One, I did it in the oven. You ever do that?
No.
That works really well. You can make hard-boiled eggs in the oven.
How long do you put them in the oven for?
I'd have to look up the exact times and the temperature. But basically, you know, you heat your oven up to the set temperature, and then you put them in. I just took our cupcake pan and put one egg in each hole.
Okay.
You don't have to do that. You can just. I think I've known some people to put them on the grate, but I've also done them in the Instant Pot, and that literally takes it down from you. You know, it takes you what, half hour to get a pot of butter going, and then, you know, the eggs are another hour.
What the hell are you? How are you boiling your water?
I got a big pot of water because I don't mess around when I make eggs. If I was only doing like a handful, I would get a saucepan and just do that. But I'm talking about, I got a big old sauce pot that I'll use for eggs. So, because I'm probably exaggerating.
I'll do like a dozen eggs.
A dozen? Right.
In my steam basket for 12 minutes. If I want them hard boiled. If I want them soft boiled, it'll be more it like takes me 6 to 8 minutes.
I think the Instant Pot's about 8 minutes, maybe. It's a pressure cooker, so it doesn't really take long to do
it. I never thought about trying to do it in my pressure cooker. I'd be worried it would shatter the egg. Like, I guess it doesn't, does it?
No.
If you
have an Instant Pot, I don't know. I don't know if I'd try it. And like, if you have a stove pot pressure cooker, I don't know how well that would work. At least the Instant Pot, I can somewhat control the temperature it's at. So that's also kind of interesting too. We bought when we were in the apartment because we like to cook a hamburger every once in a while. We bought one of them Cuisinart griddlers. And for the first time tonight, I used the griddle section of it and made some pancakes for dinner tonight. Just because I didn't have really anything else in the fridge for dinner other than I have the ham and I got some hamburger. I didn't have stuff to go with it. Didn't feel like going anywhere. You know, plus, it worked out really great. I mean, I wish she got like because the wife and son went out and got the box of pancake mix, buttermilk pancake mix. So it's just the kind you add water to it. So okay. I kind of wish they would have held up on that, but they bought that, so I used it, and it just mixed it up like per the directions on the box, and then I could put about a quarter cup per each pancake on the griddle. The nice thing about using the griddle side of it, basically, it's like a Forman grill. But you can fold it flat, okay? And then you can flip the grill section over, and there's the griddle. So it's a big – it's just like you had, like, one of those West Bend electric griddles. But the really nice thing about this one is I can control the temperature that the griddle's at. So it says to cook it about 375. So I just turned it out to 375 and went, and they didn't stick. They came out really good. I probably could have kept them on a little longer so they were a little bit. They were golden, but they weren't as dark as I normally would do a pancake. But now I'm excited. I need to try doing some French toast on that. See how that comes out. But, and then I just pop that, like, before I go to bed, I'll pop the plates off each side and stick it in the dishwasher and wash them. So. It works good for hamburgers, too, but I definitely don't prefer doing my hamburgers on it. I love doing them on my pellet grill. We did that over the weekend. That was good. But, I'm surprised. Finally got to use that. So let's talk a little bit about some tech. I got a recent tech purchase, something probably every single person on the show has used or a version of it. I found an Apple IIc on eBay. And the only thing it really just was just a computer, so I still have to buy the power supply. But according to the seller, it worked. But I'm not expecting that it to work 100%. I'm going to have to take it apart and clean it anyway. But the top is kind of yellowed, so I'm going to probably just take the top and do some Retrobrite on it. And I need to get... power supply. I'll probably want to get a couple games on floppies, but I think I'm going to also try and pick up a emulator. There's a floppy emulator that you can buy for it, so it just takes an SD card, a loaded SD card, a full software, and I can boot it off of that. But it was about $169, which is actually pretty good on eBay, because if you search on eBay now, you're going to see, depending on what comes with it, because there's a few on there now that will have like the monitor and everything, which I didn't care about the monitor. I'm just going to hook it up to a TV.
Hey, guys.
Hey, here's Joe. But some of them are like four or five. I'm sorry.
What are you hooking up to the TV with?
A composite video out.
Oh, okay. So it has composite video. Wait, it doesn't have composite out on it, does it?
It does.
The Apple does.
Yep.
Man, I remember
back in the day. Just like the Apple II.
Well, you don't have a composite to HDMI adapter?
Don't need it. The TV I have has it. It has a composite. In fact, that's what the I have to look, but I'm pretty sure that's what I have my Atari 800 XL hooked up to it now. What I probably do need to dig around and find is like a switcher so I can switch between those two computers. And I finally put the screws in the 800 XL. I lost the, because I had taken it apart like right before we moved to the apartment.
Does the 800 XL actually do composite, or is it doing three color RCA?
It has the RGB connector. Yeah, the way the 800 XL had a it basically would use like the same switcher box the old 2600 would use, so it would go out in channel 3, you know. But it also has an RGB port on the back of it, and I bought a cable on eBay that does the RGB to composite on the 800 XL. The Apple IIc just has a composite on the back. It probably has a real monitor port on it too, because you can get real monitors. And in a pre-show, no, before Dan or
the Atari was it the 400? I think it only had the coax.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, the one with the membrane keyboard. This one is the later model, the 800 XL.
Right, it actually had the keys that pressed.
Yes. Well, the 800, the original 800 had that, and all the XL series and the XE series has a regular keyboard. They only used the membrane keyboard on the 400, which was a way that they could try and find a cheaper version of the Atari 8-bits. But yeah, the funniest thing in the world is I got two computers sitting next to each other, and they both have the same chip that runs at the 6502 or a variant of it, because it just looking at some of the stuff, the retro stuff I've been looking at lately, a lot of them are like 6502 compatible, but they have like their own version of it, you know. Apple probably, the Apple II models probably have the least amount of custom chips hanging off of it. Like the Atari has the Antic chip and the GTIA. I think it's GTIA on the 800 XL. But just a lot of custom silicon all surrounding the 6502. And that's kind of those custom chips, you know, on the Commodore 64, you had the SID chip and you had the VIC chip. All those were proprietary to Commodore. So it's kind of why, like, I know the 8-bit guy's trying to do the Commander X16 he started that project well before the pandemic. But they're actually having problems getting boards made right now. They're nearly ready for it. They just got to figure out some things. Plus, they had some, I think a couple people exited the project. Maybe not exited it, but they haven't heard. Dave hasn't heard from them in time. I'm really excited to see what that looks like when it finishes, because it's basically like a Commodore 64 on steroids with the Vera chip and stuff that it has on it for retro computing. But that's my Apple II.
Why wouldn't you just go and purchase an old Commodore 64 and fix it up?
Well, I'll do that too at some point. The Apple II and the 800 XL were both special to me. The Apple II is what I used in school, in middle school, and
basically
mostly middle school. Yeah. School.
For me, it was grade school. But yeah.
Right. Yep. And I used them in grade school too, but mostly middle school for me. And, those are the two that I have the most memories on. So those are the two I wanted to collect first. Commodore 64. I never touched a Commodore 64. I just didn't have one or easy access to one. I had friends that had it, and so we played that. So, and I also mentioned too, there is a mini Amiga A500 now that comes with some games on it. It's very similar to what they did with the Commodore 64 mini. So it has a faux keyboard that's not functional, but it has USB ports on it and emulates everything, like with a MediaTek chip or something. But I don't necessarily want the minis. I like playing on the original hardware, but I do, like I said, I probably am at some point going to get a floppy emulator for the for both the Atari and for the Apple IIc. But the one thing that I really like to find, and it's going to be really hard to find for the Apple IIc, is they did make an actual official Apple grayscale LCD that attaches onto the top of the Apple IIc. I would love to find that, because in 1985, when I was at the Boy Scout Jamboree, I did get a case for this Apple IIc. So actually, I already have a case for it if I wanted to take it somewhere.
You still have the case? But,
yep,
I do. Holy moly.
An original from 1985.
You have the case, but not the computer, huh?
Oh, well, I do now.
Well, I mean, you had the case, but didn't have the computer in it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. They were giving it away like as a freebie. And what a lot of the scouts did then is like all their Jambo stuff, they put it. In fact, mine was all in it until I just took it out this week. But Apple was there. And one of the demo Apple IIcs they had at the Boy Scout Jamboree had this screen on it. And basically, it's very similar to like the green screen they had. They originally went with this computer, but or if you bought it together, you didn't have to buy the screen. But
did you say
there was a lot of people?
Did it come with a disk drive?
Yeah, the floppy drives. 5 1/4. Yeah, this has the 5 1/4 floppy built into it. I kind of a little bit wished I would have found the Apple IIc Plus. Which that one actually, instead of having to have an external power supply, had the power supply built into it, and you just connect the standard PC power cord to it. And that one also was in a white instead of like a beige color casing, and it had a 3.5-inch drive on it. But
what, the old PowerMac style?
No, 2C Plus. There was a 2C Plus model that had the 3.5-inch drive on it.
Oh yeah, so the floppy drive was on the side of it.
It's built into it. Yep. So I had one.
Did it have a cassette player that you could hook up to it too?
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, I don't know if Apple ever went cassette player. I know you can get them for TIs and Commodores.
Apple, because they were more expensive to begin with. Most people who bought like an original Apple II had bought the 5 1/4 drives with it.
Well, I mean, the Apple IIc had one built in.
Right.
Did all the Apple IIs have a disk drive built in?
Not built in. No. Only the IIc and the IIc Plus had drives built in. And then, of course, from then on, the Macs had it. And the Mac Classic had the 3.5-inch drive in the front of it, you know. And went on from there. Ooh, Kibi.
Yeah, I guess the Power Mac could be considered your first all-in-one PC, or an early version of an all-in-one PC.
Yeah. Not the Power Mac. You're thinking of the like the Mac 2C, Mac 2SE.
Well, the Power Mac is that's a Skittles flavored lineup that they basically had. Did have the disk drive there, but
yeah,
the computer was basically in the monitor.
I think it's just Mac. Because that's the Power Mac became more or less like the PCs were, where they had the box and the monitor and the keyboard and the mouse. But the original Mac, the Mac Classic had the keyboard and mouse and everything in one package. You know, so the screen was built into it too. It wasn't a very big screen. But then they brought out the last one in like before they went to the multicolored
it's
ones.
It's been like 30 years. So.
Right. That's right. True. Yeah. But the last one that had the putty one, they did have one all in one. In the before they went to the translucent plastic ones, like the iMac and the original Power Mac G3,
those are the ones I'm talking about. Power Mac
G3. Yeah, they had an all-in-one in the line right before that was exclusively marketed to the education environment, kind of like that era's version of the eMac. And the eMac is a G4, very similar to an iMac, but was more like the original iMac instead of the G4 iMac had was the one with the stalk on it and the LCD on the end of the stalk, which I've gotten to play with one of those. Lab that we originally built before I left Clum Estate, they had a bunch of those in there. When I started taking some of the classes, I was in there. Of course, they're long gone now because that was what, 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. Still wouldn't mind finding one of those G4 masks because those were pretty. But, or the Quicksilver G4 would be nice to have too. But in any event, that's that. And over the weekend, I was kind of, before I ordered this on eBay, I was kind of trying to see if I could find something in the thrift store or something like that. So I went to like a retro gaming shop that was closer to my old house and found about CorgsCon, which is the Central Ohio Retro Gaming Society 2022. That's their convention. It's at the Big Run Sports Complex in Columbus, Ohio, on Climb Road. It's May 14th from 10 to 5, $10 admission fee. So, and they're going to have retro vendors there, and they got some speakers. The guys they have doing the speakers are not people I've heard before, but they're pretty well known in the retro gaming community. I think these are guys that like develop games for the retro machines. So I don't know if I'm going to attend any of their talks there. My thing is that I want to see what kind of retro junk they have there. So I'm probably going to look at that. And it's unfortunately too soon because it's like in the next weekend or so. But on the East Coast, there is the East Coast VCF or Retro. I'm trying to remember the name. Bill Hurd. I'm actually friends with Bill Hurd, who was one of the original developers on the Commodore 64. Right? Yeah. And he also had a big hand in the Plus Fours. He tweeted about that, and unfortunately it's just too soon for me to go to it.
Wow.
Well, evidently, one of the people that I've been hanging around with doing campaign stuff is one of the developers for Borderlands 3.
Whoa, look at that! Cool.
There you go. Holy, I was just, I don't know if this is actually a real thing, but somebody Facebook messaged or did a Facebook post on Bill Hurd's Facebook page because the Commodore 64 is now 40 years old. And some guy is building a gold edition laptop using a genuine C64 hardware. That would be cool to see. Kind of like a modern version of the SX64, which I believe Bill also had a hand on. Okay, VCF East, which is Vintage Computer Federation. The event is, it's next weekend, April 22nd, 23rd, and 24th. And I need to figure out where it is. it's in Wall, New Jersey. Dude, Murph can go over to that if he wanted to. But Bill Hurd, I think Bill Hurd's planning on being there, so it'd be pretty cool to see that, but... But so in May, I probably will do CorgsCon since it's local here. I also will probably do the Dayton Hamvention at least one day. And I will not be staying in a hotel for that. I'm looking on the Hamvention's Facebook page, and there's some people that are saying a rooms in the area for Hamvention are going to be $325 a night.
Wow.
Nope.
Yeah, I said no. I would not. I do like staying in there, even though it's not that far away from me. It's like an hour and a half or so. But I do like that because if, especially if I want to go and take advantage of all 3 days. So what I'll probably end up doing is I'll probably just go Sunday, just because I'd like to get my name in the barrel and get a chance to win one of the big rigs.
Probably rent a camper.
Well, but you'd have to find a place to put it. The only place you probably can put it.
Walmart parking lot.
I don't know if there's a Walmart near Xenia. That's part of the problem. The closest campground I know of to that would probably be the KOA, and I'd guarantee you it's already full. But because this is the first time they've been back since 2019, so. But
it's only three days. Pick a side street, any side street.
Trust me, I have thought about that. Actually, though, I have looked into renting RVs in the past, and they're not cheap either.
Well, just get yourself a teardrop trailer. You'll be fine.
Yeah. I can't tow that, though, I don't think. Unless it's 1,500 or under.
Teardrops are actually really, really small. It's basically a bed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd have to know what the weight is, because I think my Traverse does have a hitch, but it's also the two-wheel drive version of it, so it doesn't have the 5,000-pound towing capacity that the all-wheel drive version has. So same thing with my son's Trailblazer, so that's the same thing too.
Yeah, but you really don't get lighter than a teardrop trailer.
Right, true. But it's okay. I'll just drive it. Even if I want to go multiple days, hold on. There, I didn't want to sneeze in your ear.
Buy a van.
It's close enough. So I can just drive over each day and pay for the parking. I don't mind it. The parking's cheap.
Get a conversion van, sleep in the back. It'll be fine.
You talk about stuff like that. I was looking since I shopped for cars recently, Facebook has given me a lot of like stuff from Mark Wahlberg and stuff. And they had a panel van, like an old panel van that looked like it was in decent shape. And I thought, ooh, that'd be neat to build out a little camper.
And the first time I saw it, I would paint free candy on the side for you.
But actually, that's the giveaway that Hershey was doing with the Reese's shake, break and shake, or whatever you call the candy that I had there. So it was a little teardrop camper decorated like a Reese's cup.
Yeah, that would be cool.
I tried some new ice cream from Rebel. Mint chip.
What the hell is that?
Rebel it's makes like the low carb?
Yeah, Rebel makes the low carb stuff, yeah.
Oh, yeah, the keto ice cream.
Yes, keto ice cream is what it is, yep. Mint chip is just like mint chocolate chip, except it's not light green in color. So it's a minty ice cream with chocolate chips in it. Keto chocolate chips in it. But... And of course, right now I do have a time off request in to go to the Southeast Linux Fest. Although they have not updated their website since it looks like last May. They do have the times, so either way, if I don't go down there, I might look into me just going somewhere, just for the heck of it again. I wouldn't have took the family down.
If they're doing Texas Linux Fest this year, I think if they are, it's probably in Austin. So hopefully next year it's back this way.
Right. Yeah, Jeremy has kind of pulled himself off. I mean, he still has accounts on Facebook and Twitter, but I don't think he uses them very much. So I went through the Southeast Linux Fest contact page, and I haven't heard anything from him. And they moved off of Freenode for their IRC chat. Yeah, and I don't see either one of the handles that Jeremy would use on an IRC in the Southeast Linux Fest one. There's a couple bots in there. I want to find out.
Texas Linux Fest is at the end of this month in Austin.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Austin.
Yeah, how far is that from your place?
You know, 3-4 hours probably.
That's what I was gonna guess. The
problem is, I'm still campaigning.
Right.
And early voting starts in that time frame.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're campaigning what till November, right?
No. Election day is May 7th for me.
Oh, okay.
Early voting is April 25th.
Okay. But yeah, I'm going to probably reach out to the hotel or see if I can't find an actual phone number for Jeremy and see if I can't call him. Because what I want to find out if it's still going on or if they just decided they're just going to keep it virtual. And if so, I want to find out if there is a show rate for the hotel, because I checked both Expedia and the Marriott website, because Sheraton's owned by Marriott now. But I checked both of those, and the price per night was $157 a night. Way higher than I think I paid when I was there the last time. So, you know, and that's one you really don't want to stay at another hotel, mostly because it's just more convenient to flop down in your bed, you know, walk over to your bed and flop down into it, than have to drive back to your hotel. That and the hotels that are kind of close to there but cheap are really not good. So, I wouldn't be afraid to pay that, but you know, we shall see. That may make the difference between me coming home Saturday or Sunday, because there's not much going home Sunday usually. But Sunday, and or instead of leaving, checking out Sunday, check out Saturday. But because I'm planning on, if I go down, I'm gonna drive down on the Thursday. I am off that day, and that way I can get good rest and then wake up and go down and get checked in for the show and all that. There's not much going on Friday either when you really think about it, but I just want to, you know, be there when, and I don't even know how many of the people that I know are actually going to go this year. I know Dan probably won't. He's probably got stuff going on.
It's a tough time of year for me.
Well, I was going to say it's a tough time of year, like, for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's always like right at the end of the school year when we're trying to get things wrapped up. It's hard to get the days off to do that. Like take the days off.
Well, you're taking days off, but you're not taking days off to do that. But
right.
So I need to see if I can't. They don't do much. That looks like it. I mean, I'm going back scrolling, just on the front page of the website, and they have that T-shirt that I had, the Matrix one, which was really cool. I think I might have gotten rid of that one though, because it started to get ratty. Because I wear T-shirts all the freaking time now. That's like my work uniform. Yeah, it was from 2019, actually. 2018 was the year with the bowling one. The bowling theme. So, yeah, I need to figure out a way to reach out directly to Jeremy and find out if it's still going on or not. I know he's probably hit hard by the last couple of years, and I'd even, like, if they have a pay-to-get-the-T-shirt crap, I will definitely do that, too. Just because, in fact, I would not only just do the base level just to get the T-shirt and stuff, but I'd probably throw in an extra 10 or 20 in there just so that it can keep on going. But it's one of the best Linux Fests there are.
And oh, yeah, very sad absolutely. If it would
go away. Yep.
And the thing that kind of stinks about it is, like, the tough part about it for me is, if I want to go on the cheap, I have family that lives down there.
Huh?
So, like,
That would be too horrible.
my sister-in-law lives like right around Charlotte, and my mother-in-law lives about an hour away. Not even an hour away, so it's not. And I did that the one year. I did, you know, the whole family went down to my mother-in-law's, and then I drove. That's the year I think Peter 64 was there. I drove, and Paige went with me too. The only downside is this: the last thing you want to do is hang out and then drive an hour back.
Yeah, that's true.
It was worth it. Because not just
the I always liked it better when it was in Spartanburg, to be honest. I liked it better when it was in Spartanburg. I'm going to be brutally honest on that. In Spartanburg, it was like closer to restaurants and stuff. And with the Shark, you know, don't get me wrong. Where it's at now is not bad either. At least they make sure that we can get a quick bite to eat during the day with bringing in the food trucks. But
yeah,
but after where
it's at, you can go down the highway to some. There's a few places along the highway, or you can go into Charlotte, which is like a stone's throw away. And there's a couple of places in between there that are like the I don't know if you went with us when we went to the Caribbean place.
Oh no, I didn't go then.
That was really good, but like you wouldn't really even know it was there. Because it's kind of like off the road and off the main like roads and stuff. You're right. When it was in Spartanburg or whatever,
walk right it's across a smaller, the street and get some sushi.
Yeah, it's a smaller. It was like kind of like a smaller area. It wasn't like
as big. And the Beacon was just down the street from there. I mean, it was very. Everything was really close, but. And like I said, and it's actually kind of cool because I would actually get a discount because I've got the Easy Pass now. Because I have to go the whole West Virginia Turnpike, which the tolls on all the toll roads has gone up substantially. Definitely in Pennsylvania, they don't even have you stop and grab the tag and the little ticket anymore. And that started actually in 2020 during the pandemic because they didn't want to take people's grubby money or anything like that. So now if you don't have an Easy Pass, they take a picture of your plate and then they'll send the bill to the plate, whoever has that car registered. So if you rented a car, go to the rental company. But
borrow your dad's car, guess what?
Goes through your dad because you don't even have to stop. There's no toll people at the Pennsylvania Turnpike anymore starting in 2020. So, but you know, so at least I can make sure that the Easy Pass is filled up and I don't have to worry about having a few bucks to throw to the toll person.
They try to keep a surplus in there for the toll.
Yes.
Around $20. So if I get low, they'll pull another $20 out or whatever. But if I don't drive for a while.
Heck, I think mine would work down there.
It'll just sit there.
Yeah, mine should work down there too, I think.
Mine will work on all the ones on the East Coast. And
anyone says Easy Pass.
Yeah. Well, a lot of... Generally, any of your toll tags will work together.
Yep. Now, and I don't know if it's an official app or if it's an app that just kind of uses the website, but I did find an app that lets me check how much is in my Easy Pass account. I don't think it will let you add from the app, but because I think it's just you're just logging into it and it's just formatting it so it hits your so it fits on your screen. So, but it's kind of nice to have that. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know. If I don't do the Southeast Linux Fest, I might just take a trip down there anyway, or maybe go down to Dad's for a few days, you know. And I'd still probably just go by myself just because it'd be nice for me to get some time with Dad and hang out with him. So that actually depends on some things. Cause I stopped my dad the other day and my nephew, and I don't know how my nieces and nephews are going to be doing this or not, but my niece had moved in with like a friend, a roommate, into an apartment. So she moved out from my brother's house, and I got to meet her over Christmas. She's really nice. She's not, you know, they're just roommates. That's all they are. I don't know what. Maybe they've already been in there a year, but they found out they were going to raise her rent $300 a month. So what might end up happening is I think my nephew Richard may move in with his sister and her friend Sarah into a bigger place, you know. But like I have to crack up laughing at what some of these places want for rent now. A lot of them want more in rent than my house payment. I'm not kidding. And I'm like, how are these young kids doing this?
It's because of inflation right now.
Oh yeah. But I mean, even before all that, like when we were looking for a 3-bedroom in Grove City, the cheapest I could find was $2,000 for something that was actually nice and not a lot like a shitty apartment, you know. Not far from where I live, actually, it's over on 665, right across the street from the Meyer, is like $2,200 for a 3-bedroom. And ours wasn't too bad for the 6-month lease, but then it raised up to over $2,000 when we had to do the month to month. So it's hard for me to believe that was almost a year ago, too. But then we get the fun stuff. We got the first water bill, which was $585.09.
For 1 month?
So, fees and everything?
Well, no, they were back charging me all the way back to when we moved in July, which still that's high. All right. So I called them up because I was kind of pissed. All right, because the original word we heard from D.R. Horton was we wouldn't be responsible for any of that. So then they said, well, the HOA is because it's a conjunction between the builder, the HOA, and Pioneer Energy Management, who's doing the water billing for our house. Okay, our water technically comes from the city of Columbus, but that's who we pay instead of city of Columbus. So, and this is all happening like right at what I got the first bill right when we got back from vacation. So I'm like, oh, great. We just spent a bunch of money in this. So, I call them. So they said, we'll get this letter from the HOA. I get the letter like a week after that. Okay. I'm reading through the letter. First, it says, has my neighbor's address on the letter itself, which, and I think they had another piece of paper in with it too. They actually had the right address, but I digress. But then it also said, instead of saying "Dear Joel" on the letter, it said "Dear Laura." It also had the wrong close date on it, and then it had the number that was actually on our bill. But then they said, D.R. Horton has asked that that you pay $380, which I don't really want to pay that, but that's a little bit more easy to digest than $585. So we call the HOA and all this stuff, and we told them how bad the letter was that we got, because it was like probably the single worst business correspondence I had ever received was in that letter. The language was okay. But, you know, it just wasn't wrote. I mean, it wasn't good business for him either. So so right now I'm going to probably send them the $25.19 or whatever the 1 month charge was until they figure this stuff out. Because I'm not going to go pay $380 unless I don't want to go pay that and then saying, well, you still owe us $200. I'm like, no. I'm like, I'm going to pay just for the 1 month, and then the next billing cycle, hopefully before then, we'll have that sorted out. because nobody knows what they're doing. So, but such is life living in a new neighborhood. And at least most of my section's almost done. The whole section behind us, they're going gangbusters on building it. But it's 10 o'clock. It's time to shut down.
Yeah.
And if you are in the Columbus area, I probably will be at CorbsCon. So stop by, say hi. I should get a t-shirt made before that. Promote the show.
Did you say CorpsCon?
CorgsCon, which is the Central Ohio Retro Gaming Society Convention. It's from 10 to 5, May 14th at the Big Run Sports Complex. In Columbus, Ohio.
I thought you said CorpsCon and that you had joined like X Anonymous or something.
That had been something our good friend, and because we were talking about Southeast Linux Fest, that makes me think about him. But Fitty, we miss you, buddy. Itself, the last time I was at Self was the last time I saw him. So,
you saying 50 was into necrophilia?
He bought those two hearses. I don't know. I don't think he was in the necrophilia, but I know he was.
I don't think he was either.
Was that a commentary on his hearses or him being dead?
That's
probably a little of both. He did have two hearses, so. Yeah, I miss him. And I miss Lord Drakenblut too.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
And that Lord Drakenblut, that's been what, 6 years already?
It's been a little while.
Yep. His account on Facebook stopped putting random stuff out, so I wonder if his girlfriend and daughter moved out of where they were or something and finally shut the computer or the Pi down that was running it. or the service shut down that was doing it for him. But it was so weird seeing, like, for a year, his Facebook page, you would see stuff all the time.
What, he was reposting random news articles or something?
Yeah, like Fedora articles and stuff like that. He had, like, some automation thing that still worked after he died.
All right. I guess we'll play us out. Thank you, everybody. See you in a week. Thanks, Joe. Thanks, Joel. Thanks, Pat, who left a little while ago. Mm-hmm. Here it is. Your promos.
I am short.
Oh, my God.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called Libre Quest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush. Shut up. Just shut up.
Daddy has a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making egg poo young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tired.
A lot of hobnobbing with the bosses. I mean, with the public.
Yeah, that too. I just gotta start sleeping more.
I loved some of your posts where you had to explain to people who. about the various things.
Yeah, I need to post a couple more. I think I have one more that's ready to be posted to Facebook, but it's a little bit longer. It's right around the 5 minute mark instead of the minute and a half mark I try to keep it at.
Right. Yeah, they're asking you things that the Texas Department of Education controls. It's like, you can't fix that.
Yeah, well, you know, and I've explained that to people where that's not really the purview of the school board, but they're like, we don't care, we want to know your ideology. And it's like,
Because apparently that's important.
Around here in this nonpartisan race that seems to be very partisan, yeah, I guess it is.
It's just like when they go to elect a judge or something.
Say goodnight to the people, Joel.
Goodnight, people.
It was great.
Nice. Yeah, we didn't record anything last week. We just kind of, Pat and I hung out and talked for a little bit. Joe came in too. Just got a message from Joe a little bit ago that he may not be able to make it. He's at a campaign function.
All right.
And I got me an Apple IIc in the mail today.
Ay, 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 ay.
Mm-hmm. Woo! See, after the show, I might go fill my tank up on my car.
Wow, where are you going?
Nowhere till after work tomorrow. I don't know why he's coming to Columbus, but my boss is, and his family is coming down to Columbus, so we're going to probably meet him tomorrow evening. Me and I have another coworker that lives in the area too, so we'll probably go out to dinner or something. Thursdays are always good because Luke's bowling his Mettons League.
Is he, wait, did they used to have an office in Columbus, Ohio?
My company? No. No, but, this other guy, he used to work with me at Columbus State, so I got him, in fact, I got that's how I got my laptop here, because I got a bonus for, getting him on the team.
Ooh.
Hershey trip was nice.
Talk about it in a minute. Hold on.
Oh, yep.
Why is this thing?
So it might just be me, you, and Pat. So, which is fine.
This thing got a new IP address.
And I don't know if I talked about it, but we'll probably talk about it on the show. I finally got the main part of my router inside. I kind of did it in a fun way. I don't know if I talked about the coax to Ethernet that I set up here, but we can talk about that too.
All right, there we go. There we go.
Mm-hmm. My laptop is wired, and I'm running a speed test.
So you got her pregnant, huh?
About 800 megabit download. Back to where, well, what I'm paying for, I should say. Yeah, I got 800 down and almost 6 up. So my mumble chat won't fail because of bandwidth. And there's actually a couple of events I may try to go to in May. I'll talk about that too.
All right. This is episode 950.
Woo!
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right. This is episode 950. Oh my goodness. Yes. Corkscon. All right, we'll talk into a bit in a minute.